This is a BloomerBoomer.com podcast with our travel expert, Mark Hoffman of Sports Leisure Vacations, dedicated to making travel dreams come true since 1979. Mark's co-host, Andy Asher.
Well, hi, everybody. As Marnie just told us in the introduction, Mark's been doing this a long time in the travel industry. One of these days, I'll have to ask him about some of the far-off places that he's been. But no doubt there have been a lot for him, and today I just want to find out what are the limitations, because based on my hunch, age is not that much of a factor anymore. Hey Mark, great having you here. Now there are just so many opportunities out there, aren't there?
Now there's a plethora of activities and things that are available to people that weren't 30 years ago, and you're absolutely right. Travel is not determined anymore by age. It's determined by Do you want to go? Can you afford to go? Because in some cases, travel to exotic destinations especially can be expensive. And then just, do you have the physical ability to be able to go? Some folks who are 65 can't go places that other folks who are 85 or 90 can go with ease. And it always amazes me. We've had four or five travelers hit the century mark while they were still actively traveling with Sports Leisure over the years. I have a lot of travelers in their 90s now who travel with us, and they are not, you know, they're not broken down people who are on their last legs. In many cases, they're very healthy people who got a long ways to go.
Well, Mark, I guess there would be no other better way to describe you as a veteran in the tour business. How has your business changed, or maybe not?
Our audience has always been a mature audience since we started in business over 30 years ago, and it has slid older as time has gone on because people are living to an older age and their health is better later in life. So people are able to travel is one thing that people are able to do. The better they're able to get around, the more they're able to do. So we're seeing people who now who are traveling deep into their 80s or well even into their 90s is not uncommon. And we do have some clients who are in their 50s or 60s, some folks who are still working and dabble by doing day trips and things like that. So we find that the age bracket sometimes determines what types of trips that people take because of the limitations on their time while they're still working, or at younger ages, people tend to be more involved or tend to have more things going on in their lives and don't have as much time for leisure activities. People who are in their 50s and 60s, Andy, we're seeing are more technology savvy, perhaps, than we've ever seen travelers be. I mean, it's a way of the world, so it's not surprising that travelers would be that way, but we're now seeing iPads and Kindles and smartphones show up on motor coaches, and so people have a lot more information at their fingertips than they used to, which really changes the way a tour operates. In terms of what people need or what they're looking for when they travel, I think my older clients, the people in their 70s, 80s, perhaps 90s, are looking more for security. They're looking for an itinerary that isn't too strenuous. I always tell people that when they're looking at itineraries, look for things that have multiple night stays. So if the pace of a tour can easily be identified by, if it's an 8-night tour, if three times the group stays two nights in the same location, that's six nights of multiple night stays, only two nights of one night stays. So that would be a very leisurely itinerary. On the flip side, if you found an itinerary that was eight nights and every night you were in a different hotel, then that means that that's going to be a little stronger, a little more strenuous itinerary without looking at anything else that's involved. There's going to be a lot more moving around. So that might appeal more to someone who was younger and perhaps more able, had better stamina, and was more able to tolerate that type of an itinerary.
So as a tour director, it would sound like you have to be pretty careful or plan a little bit more as far as the types of tours that different age groups might like. In other words, not every age group is going to be compatible with every single tour that you might design.
One of the challenges that we have is we're finding our demographic is splitting into two distinct groups, and we refer to them as the junior seniors and the senior seniors. And that probably divides at age 70, maybe. And one of the realities that we face is that somebody who's 58 years old doesn't want to really travel with their parents. So the person who's is 58 may not want the same thing as someone who's 80, by witness of the earlier examples that I was giving about the pace of the itinerary and just the types of things that you do. Let's face it, as you get older, you'll find that your stamina is going to wear out. You know, you'll start gung-ho at 7 o'clock in the morning, just like you always did, but by 2:30 or 3 in the afternoon, you may be saying, that's about it for major projects for the day. Whereas somebody who's younger is able to go at a longer period. So what we have done is developed itineraries that create a half or two-thirds of a day of organized activity, then followed by free time that places people in a place where they can perhaps walk to an attraction. It might be across the street or just up the block, or offer to provide transportation and facilitate getting people to an added attraction, whereas some folks may choose to peel off. Might be a specialty attraction like a museum that appeals to a special type of special interest, maybe a quilting museum or a baseball museum or something of that sort, where not everybody would want to go, and some people might like the freedom to go back to their hotel room. Plus, on any given day, if you take a group of 30 people, somebody will feel a little bit under the weather or would welcome the opportunity to have a break. So we're creating itineraries that give people more flexibility within them, and that way they are acceptable to people of different ages and different stamina and physical abilities.
Well, Mark, on a slightly different note, for folks who are not taking a tour but traveling alone, any kind of rules that you like to remind people about when they do that?
People need to make sure that they allow themselves plenty of time, especially when they're traveling independently. So if you're making a trip someplace and you're not completely familiar with where you're going and what you're doing, why, do a little bit of homework. Try not to arrive. If you're an older traveler, try not to arrive someplace after dark, particularly if you have to rent a car and negotiate your way to a nearby hotel or something like that. Arrive during daylight hours so that you can see where you're going, and if there are any issues or your flight gets delayed a couple hours, you're still arriving at a fairly reasonable time when you can get assistance. And allow yourself enough time to get through airports and negotiate things. It's, you know, flying and travel has become a little bit more complicated than it was 20 or 30 years ago. And if you're not an expert traveler that travels for business or travels for leisure all the time, if you're only an occasional traveler, the important thing is that you have enough time. So when you get to the airport and something happens unexpected and you lose 15 or 20 minutes that you hadn't anticipated, that you've still got plenty of time. There's nothing worse than starting a trip by running through an airport and dashing for an airplane, perhaps not making it. As full as airplanes are today, you definitely don't want to miss your airplane.
Mark, we were talking a little bit earlier before we started our podcast, a little secret that maybe you can share with everybody else.
A little known thing about missing your airplane: if you miss your plane, go on to the airport, like you're in a traffic jam, something happens on the way to the airport, go on to the airport, tell the airline you missed your plane. There is what is commonly known in the airline industry as the two-hour rule. If you show up within 2 hours of departure and you have a legitimate reason for having missed your flight, if you don't have one, make one up, then generally they will accommodate you on the next available flight without adding any additional charges to your ticket. So I missed my plane rule.
Good tip. Well, let's get back to the beginning. When we first started here, we brought up the tour idea or the travel idea of cruising, taking a ship somewhere. It seemed to be what people did when they first retired, and that was their big dream in life. But how does cruising look today, and what's it like out there for people who are thinking about taking a cruise ship somewhere?
I think it's really important to say that cruising is, in my mind, a little bit of a questionable way of traveling. You're traveling on a cruise ship that's flagged in a foreign country, not in the United States. Why is it flagged in a foreign country? Because tax benefits, employment rules, things that allow the cruise line to operate and increase their profit margins are basically, it's all about the dollars. And recently we've had stories come to light where people who are working on cruise ships are paying huge amounts of money to people on land to get the jobs, and they're working incredible hours for very little pay in some cases on cruise ships. I can't endorse cruise ship travel as the best way to travel. I know there's a lot of people in the travel community who really enjoy cruising. They like it a lot. But cruising has changed. It's not as inexpensive as it used to be. Everything is pretty much, they pretty much nickel and dime people when you get on board a cruise ship. nonstop from start to finish because that's how they make their money. It's no longer made in the cruise fare. It's made on the expenditures you make once you get on board. So cruising, while it certainly would appeal to someone who had a more sedate lifestyle or wasn't as interested in ports of call and going to exotic places but just enjoyed the art of cruising, then I suppose it's a reasonably economical way to travel. But I think that cruising on big ships has its drawbacks. Cruising on small ships, on the other hand, is the complete opposite of that, and one of the very best ways to travel because there's a lot more personal attention and it's an entirely different type of community than on a big cruise ship.
So for those who still love cruising or have never done it and want to try it out, any kind of rules or ideas on how they should look at it, or what's your advice?
Well, I think that you start talking about age groups again, and different cruise lines cater to different demographics. Carnival is known to be more of a younger crowd and more of a partying crowd, as opposed to Holland America is known for more mature travelers and activities that correlate with those folks' needs and desires.
Well, Mark, let's talk about one of my favorite things to do. I love to go out and eat. So when I'm traveling, I want nothing more than to try and experiment with some of the local cuisine. How do you approach that with your travelers?
We all love to try different foods and local specialties and things of that sort. So people tend to overeat when they're traveling. I know because I travel for a living, and the waistline is always a constant challenge. And so one of the ways that we distinguish between age groups is, people who are younger and more active are going to eat more. People who are older are going to eat a little bit less. So we've tried, again, to give choices, even within meals, to give people the opportunity and not to include quite as many meals, to give people more freedom to choose in the evening a bowl of soup or a steak dinner. And that way the person who's having a bowl of soup doesn't have to pay for the guy who wants to have a $30 steak.
So moving now from food to just planning an itinerary, because everybody has a little different goal in mind or what they want to experience or see, how do you design different itineraries for different people?
My older clients, the people in their 70s, 80s, perhaps 90s, are looking more for security. They're looking for an itinerary that isn't too strenuous. I always tell people that when they're looking at itineraries, look for things that have multiple night stays. So if the pace of a tour can easily be identified by, if it's an 8-night tour, if 3 times the group stays 2 nights in the same location, that's 6 nights of multiple night stays, only 2 nights of one night stays. So that would be a very leisurely itinerary. On the flip side, if you found an itinerary that was 8 nights and every night you were in a different hotel, then that means that that's going to be a little stronger, a little more strenuous itinerary without looking at anything else that's involved. There's going to be a lot more moving around. So that might appeal more to someone who was younger and perhaps more able, had better stamina, and was more able to tolerate that type of an itinerary.
So we've been talking about more of traditional travel, the normal travel that's been this way for many years. And, of course, you've been around for such a long time. And as we wind our interview up today, what are you seeing as far as different types of travel? What are the interests there, whether it be exotic travel, adventure travel, and how do you see that going forward?
Of course, folks are going to more exotic destinations. I was just at a travel convention a couple weeks ago in which the folks from Dubai were there, and I have to tell you, there's probably a pretty good chance that a trip to Dubai is going to pop up on the Sports Leisure Vacations travel calendar sometime in the next year. So folks are going to more and more exotic places, which in some cases, yes, requires that they have certain vaccinations or things of that sort. Visas and things like that are important, but that really, it would be hard to just make a general statement because those things vary from destination to destination in terms of what you specifically would need to be able to travel to one place. But more importantly is choosing what time of the year you're going to go. You look at a price and you say, wow, that's really inexpensive. But if you don't do your homework, and now it's easier to do your homework than it ever was before, you can find out whether that's off-season. You know, is that the middle of the scorching summer in Australia? And you didn't think about that because they're in the southern hemisphere and the seasons are different. So as important as being prepared medically, I think, is medical is all about your comfort when you get there. And being comfortable when you get there has a lot to do with choosing the right time to go. Seniors generally try to, it's been my experience, we don't go on summer vacation. when the kids are out of school. We go on summer vacation the week before Memorial Day or the 2 weeks after Labor Day because things are not as crowded. We don't have as many kids underfoot and things of that sort. So from a medical standpoint, yes, there are things that you should consider. There's a whole... We could spend a whole another hour talking about, you know, how to pack medications and how to travel, you know, if you've got some kind of medical issue. But probably the best piece of information we could give people in terms of medical situations, emergencies, traveling, and the like is if you're going off the continent, you want to go to the State Department website and you want to enroll in the STEP program, S-T-E-P. And what that does is it, you're simply telling your government, this is where I'm going and when I'm going to be there. So if you happen to be in, oh, let's say Japan, in a rather innocuous time of the year, like April when you would, or May when you wouldn't expect anything to happen and there's a major earthquake, and you happen to be in an area that's affected, somebody knows where you are and can advocate for you. So look at all that's happened in the Middle East. A seemingly peaceful country like Egypt suddenly became a powder keg, and a couple thousand American tourists were trapped there temporarily. So probably the most important piece of wisdom I could give folks for traveling outside the country is to make sure that you're enrolled in that STEP program with the State Department, just so that someone who can advocate for you knows where you're going and when you're going to be home.
Well, my final question was going to focus on adventure travel. Now, I didn't quite have adventure travel like you just mentioned, but travel that might be a little bit more exciting than the average traveler had considered in the past.
We're starting to find, Andy, is that the lines are getting more blurred, and probably things are being less determined by age than they are by health, financial ability to pay for something, and just the desire to go. I really think that we saw, you know that we have a former president who has made himself somewhat famous as an adventure traveler in his post-presidential years by jumping out of airplanes on landmark birthday events. And so and that you might think, well, that's just one person. But what happened was when he jumped out of an airplane at 80 years old, that sent a signal to a lot of people who were 80 years old who said, you know what? Maybe I can do things that I didn't think that I could do, or people told me I couldn't do something, but I can do it. And the evidence of that is about a year ago, the first sports leisure travelers went ziplining on a tour. It wasn't included in the package. We took a group to Catalina Island, and some of them asked the tour director, hey, could we do this? And the tour director said, sure, I'll set it up for you. If you got the money and you want to go, I will make it happen. And so that's now become an annual thing in Catalina as an option. We're taking a group to Hawaii this year where we're offering zip lining and bungee jumping as an option. You would be surprised, Andy, how many grandpas and grandmas have that particular item on their bucket list.
Mark, your enthusiasm is contagious. I just want to start looking at booking a tour as soon as I possibly can. But again, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. And again, that's Mark Hoffman with Sports Leisure Vacations. He is on the web at sportsleisure.com. Been around since 1979, and they work tirelessly to create and execute some of the most imaginative itineraries in the tour industry. So thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to this BloomerBoomer.com podcast with Mark Hoffman of Sports Leisure Vacations. You can also access the podcast on iTunes. If you want more information about travel ideas and what Mark is planning next, check out sportsleisure.com. And by the way, we encourage you to leave a comment in the podcast reply section. Finally, we would love it if you'd register to receive our BloomerBoomer.com newsletter with more of Mark's travel ideas. Thanks again.